He's a Minnesota singer, songwriter, composer, Rick Barron, and his song More Than America. Already 29 minutes past the hour on this Broken Road Radio Wednesday morning, and Doug Greenwald joins us from Columbia, Maryland. Doug, good morning to you.
Morning, guys.
And David in the newsroom. We talked last week about preserving Bible times, and kind of not, maybe the next phase isn't the right way to determine it, but the next level of involvement, engagement with this idea of a discipling framework. Now, Doug, senior teaching fellow at Preserving Bible Times, and executive director. The website is preservingbibletimes.org. It's a ministry really intent on reconstituting the historic and cultural context of Scripture for us, so that we can see it in full dimension. And discipling is really one of the key areas where you're hard at work, huh, Doug?
Well, it is, but it's an area we never really focused on. As you know, restoring passages and putting them back into their first century original contextual understanding from a geographical, cultural, historical, literary, and visual point of view is what we really love to do. And as we would travel the country, giving our Bible and Context seminars in its various configurations. If you get a time to talk with a pastor, you generally find out that making disciples isn't going very well. And you generally find that 99 out of 100 of them are a little bit discouraged and a little bit perplexed. And from a contextual perspective, since we hung around the Gospels a lot, I would start to ask questions of pastors. Well, did you notice Jesus doing this? And did you observe this happening in that particular time frame with Jesus and the disciples? And the answer we got 9 out of 10 times was no, hadn't seen that before, hadn't thought about that. So that's what caused us to start to write about discipling. It's sort of, to use boating terms, you know, it was a theme, it was an issue, it was a malady that just sort of came in over the transom. And we've been dealing with that more and more ever since. My book, Making Disciples Jesus's Way, is the book of all the books we sell and offer here at Preserving Bible Times, the one that has sold the most by far. It seems to scratch where people are itching. And so, you know, it's been 7 years now that we've been focusing off and on and thinking about it, and had a number of epiphany moments in that journey. And one of them was this realization that the Western Evangelical Church has done a reasonably good job of handing out 1,000 facts, doctrinal facts, biblical facts, theology facts, dogma facts, apologetic facts, but a woefully poor job of providing frameworks that organize those facts together in a cohesive way. And so, because we've been working on frameworks for understanding the Bible in context, it was a pretty natural extension for us to start thinking about frameworks for making disciples Jesus' way. And that's what we've been doing, and that's what we continue to do, and we are continuing to refine those frameworks. And in a week or two, I'm going to be introducing another refined look at a biblical framework for making disciples Jesus' way as part of one of our monthly reflections.
Yeah, and we should mention that monthly reflections are available to everybody. They're free. They're delivered via email. Some marvelous reading each month coming out from Preserving Bible Times. I've learned a lot and benefited quite a bit from those reflections myself. So this framework is kind of like how to take those facts and employ them, huh? To understand them and make use of them.
Yeah, you know, I try to think of various analogies. Like, it's a little bit like a roadmap. You know, if you left Baxter and Brainerd and decided you wanted to go to Tucumcari, Arizona, would you consult a map?
Well, I would.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that's what frameworks do. They're sort of a map of the journey that needs to be traveled, and the terrain you're going to need to cross, and the places you're probably going to need to stop and spend an overnight, you know, to get you to where you want to go. And perhaps another analogy would be, have you ever tried to put a puzzle together without ever having seen what the top of the puzzle box looks like?
I could see it, 1,000 pieces of jigsaw puzzle in front of me and no box to go by. It would be a challenge.
Well, it sure would. And that's another benefit of a framework, is it organizes things and it gives you a way to look at it and to fit everything in place and to make sure that nothing is missing with the framework. There's some other benefits to framework. With the framework, you know how to start thinking about yourself. With a framework, you can now do an audit of yourself, if you will. With a framework of how to make disciples, maybe you have a significant role to play in discipling yourself, which I think is a huge paradigm shift. You know, the old traditional way of the wise old gray-haired salts downloading their wisdom to young bucks, that's almost extinct. Yes, it goes on in a few places here and there, but there really aren't enough wise old men to go around anymore.
Well, there's not enough wisdom. A lot of those wise old men have traveled the same route that we have, and they don't know either. You know, we're generations removed from that, I think.
And, you know, that's what we find, is that every person who has gray hair pretty much defines themselves as not yet ready to disciple someone else. Mm. Because the church hasn't brought them along to a point where they feel confident about that, where they've matured enough that they feel that they have something worthwhile to pass along. And so we have to find a whole new paradigm. And I think we have to shift it from a hierarchical paradigm to a peer discipling paradigm, a horizontal paradigm, and also a self-discipling paradigm. I think we need to challenge people to take responsibility for their own discipling. I just think we've created an implied understanding that if you hang around a church long enough, somehow you'll become a disciple. And that's a great fallacy. That's a false narrative. And so I'm hopeful that with a framework, lots of things can start to take place in this whole area of the process of making disciples that maybe we've really not been able to pay attention to, have enough focus, have enough of a framework, have enough direction to even know what to do. So
you brought up an idea.
That's why we're doing what we're doing.
You brought up an idea to me several weeks ago during a discussion, and we were kind of going along similar lines, wondering why the church hasn't taken hold of this and kind of, you know, grieving over the loss of possibilities. And I asked you, well, what do you do every day when you get up? What do you do to advance your abilities, your knowledge, your wisdom? How do you get to be more like that rabbi? And you suggested an idea, and it's this this lateral kind of the covenant groups is what you said. Small groups of people, maybe a small group of men or a small group of women, because you really complicate things when you get both in the same group. But maybe friends, maybe close friends, maybe not. But you agree to get together and go through the process together, to disciple together, and to really communicate from the heart.
I think research from, I think it's the Navigators, but I could be wrong on that, is pointing out that a group of three or four is the most effective way to advance discipling in the kingdom of God. 6, 7, 8 gets to be too unwieldy, too difficult to coordinate. And you're right, a group of three or four in a covenant kind of setting is a very powerful way to go forward. Now, having done that, now the framework really becomes helpful, because it starts to lay out the major areas of emphasis, the major issues that need to be dealt with. And then the group can collectively say, yeah, let's focus on this part of the equation here for the next 6 months. And there, you know, it might end up be a group going for 10 years that covers 12 issues or topics in the framework. But at least it's intentional, at least it is pointed in a direction, and it's getting things done in a way that never would have been done before.
And this is different from what you would call an accountability group.
It is, because my notion of an accountability group, at least the ones I've heard about, is to say, okay, we're going to meet once a week or whatever it is, and we're going to hold ourselves accountable to these five things. And they do that. But believe me, there's a lot more than five things involved in becoming a fruitful disciple of Jesus. So accountability groups to me are often limited in their perspective because they only confine themselves to the four, five, six, several areas that they want to jointly hold each other accountable in. Mm-hmm.
David, have you ever been part of a small group like that, either accountability or a covenant group?
No, and the head is buzzing. The head is just going crazy. And I know every time we've talked about this making disciples process, I've always, and you, Doug, have said what somehow we've got to do is take a guy who is the resultant of 1,000 years of Greek thinking and linear thinking and non-emotional thinking and the 21st century guy and put him into a framework that existed 2,000 years ago or was taken for granted to be 2,000 years ago. That's the way people were 2,000 years ago. And it's a very difficult thing to do. It's even a difficult thing to explain, much less actually do it. I remember after the I just dug out your Making Disciples Jesus Way book, and I remember talking to the woman who was there with from my church, and she said, "I've been looking around for other people we can get involved in this, and a couple of people have said, you know, this looked interesting, and maybe we should, and I'll get back to you. Here's my phone number," and then she said, "Maybe we should just start with three." But the notion of starting with three assumes that someday you'll grow to five, and then you'll have 7 and 19 and 43 and et cetera, where what I'm thinking and what I'm hearing from you, Doug, is it's better to stay at three.
Well, no, we've got two different issues here. From a Bible study point of view, which is, I think, what you were talking about, I mean, it really does help to go back and understand the world of the first century. A la the weekend I spent at the First Evangelical Free Church. But in talking about discipling covenant groups, it's really, really very different. It's very contemporary. For example, I think we have to resist the notion of making this too complicated. Here's my envision of how three guys could get together. They get together and they decide they're going to spend 6 months together. Fine. And when they're going to meet and, you know, the logistics and the mechanics. And the agenda for the first month is have each of the guys take 30 to 45 minutes and tell their life story. Where did they grow up? What kind of parenting did they have? What kind of ethnic community did they arise in? What was their high school growing up experience? What were their hopes? What were their joys? What were their fears? What were the disappointments in their life? Just literally sharing your life. And then each of the three persons do that. And then they say, well, what is there a common denominator in the life history of what we've just heard? And somebody might say, you know, it seems to me we all have faulty views of God. And if there's agreement on that, you might want to take a certain book, a Packer book, perhaps, or a Tozer book, and spend just a little bit of time reviewing again the attributes of God. What does it really mean that God is sovereign in my life, you know? And now that you know a little bit about each person, you can start to ask questions. You can start to reinforce and affirm. And so you go, you know. And maybe you get to a point where you look at each other and say, you know, how are we doing serving God's kingdom? And each of the three guys says, well, I'm not really doing much at all. Well, can we covenant that the three of us together want to find a common way that we can all make a contribution to God's kingdom? You know, that may be two or three more months. This is not complicated. And the thing that a framework does for you, it allows you to know the topics, the issues, abiding with God, spending time in God's family, engaging the world that you want to focus on. When it deals with God, it can be the attributes of God. It can be facts of the faith. You know, there are different subcategories of that. And slowly but surely, you know, you can use books or other resources as springboards to discuss, to debate, as you know more and more about each person's journey. And you will be absolutely amazed at the discipling that implicitly starts to occur in the spiritual growth and the spiritual challenges that start to permit. And that's what the whole discipling journey is. And then after 6 months, you caucus and you say, do we want to continue this for another 6 months or shall we disband? And you go with whatever the flow is on that one. And, you know, history tells me that covenant groups that get started like that usually carry on for 8 or 10 years. But, you know, we have to resist the perspective in terms of these discipling covenant groups of just making it too complicated, because it isn't. It's really sharing your life around a series of foci or focuses that have spiritual core at their foundation.
You know, the word that comes to mind is submit, because if you become part of a covenant group, you have to be willing to drop facades, make yourself vulnerable, and be earnest and sincere and out front with who you are. And that's pretty scary for guys. I wonder.
Well, it is. And after a while, after you've spent grace time with each other, then slowly you can move into, I'll call it gentle truth time, where one of the brothers or sisters, depending on the nature of the group, might say to another brother or sister, you know, Harry or Harriet, if God is sovereign, why do you worry so much? Which is a great question. Okay? Mm-hmm. Because it points out a false narrative. It points out a huge chink in someone's understanding about who they are and who God is. And those kind of gentle challenges start to enter into the dialogue in a very natural way, where they're accepted because, you know, the other person cares about you. You've been together long enough to establish that. And so slowly but surely, the false narratives in our lives get opened up to the scrutiny of others, and discipling maturity continues to unfold.
The phrase that comes to mind is, check your guns at the door.
<You know? laughs> But yeah. Bring your spittoons.
Drop the defenses, yeah.
One of the things that while you were talking, popped into my, you know, the canoggin here, is that the whenever I hear the word disciple, I think of the 12. And whenever I hear become a disciple, I think I'll be won't be number 13, but maybe I'll be 27. I guess I'm thinking more along the lines of a position in a growing body called the church. And, you know, and there probably has never been a time, or maybe there's been times like this repeated often in the history of the world, that the church needs help, because it's getting away from its mission. It's, you know, it's doing a lot of interesting, fascinating Bible study about global warming or
finances or raising kids or
raising money and all the things that have nothing to do with the gospel. And, you know, what you're talking about is almost like disciples with a small d, where you're helping each other. And I think the phrase that I heard you say, spiritual growth, is something that we've been on, whether we like to acknowledge it or not, for most of our life, if we're paying attention.
Well, your caveat, if we're paying attention, might be a real discerning thing here. Mm-hmm. One of the things that strikes me is you can go to church to a packed worship service and still be a Lone Ranger. Mm-hmm. David Reisman, a Harvard sociologist in the 60s, put out a well-known book called The Lonely Crowd. So the fact that we're in circulation with lots of other believers doesn't necessarily mean that discipling is taking place. And I think sometimes that's a false illusion that we have. That's where we get this notion that if we hang around the church long enough, discipling happens by osmosis. But let me go back to your use of the word disciple and go back to the first century and set the context for that word. It's true. Rabbis called certain men, young men in that era, to come and follow me, which means come and be with me and submit to my authoritative teaching. And in that process, they became his disciples. Now, there's a whole nother, and that's the 10 or 12. There's a whole nother hanger-on group. Every once in a while, the Gospels make reference to the 70, you know, which is bigger than the 12. Mm-hmm. That's another group of second-tier people who also would have seen themselves as disciples of Rabbi Jesus. And then there's a whole bunch of people, actually a greater number of people, in Bethsaida and in Capernaum and Chorazin and Magdala and lots of other places, towns and villages, who never would have traveled with Jesus, maybe never even heard him speak, but knew of people in the hanger-on crowds who came back to the town and city from time to time, and they would go to them and say, tell me what he's teaching. And because of their strong oral tradition training, they could do a very good job of reciting exactly what Jesus said. And that person in the town would say, yes, I believe that too. I'm going to submit myself to that kind of teaching. And that person would also see him or himself as a disciple of Yeshua, even though they never met Jesus, even though they never traveled with him. So the point I'm making is there's like at least three different bands of people, all of whom would have seen themselves as disciples of Jesus, very few of which would have ever walked with them. I think we can see this phenomena in pro football season, since we're on the verge of that. I continue to be amazed at the number of people who consider themselves to be fans of the Dallas Cowboys who've never ever lived in Texas. They're disciples from a distance. And that phenomenon was going on as well. So, you know, let me release you from the more captive notion you have there of disciple, as if it's one of the big 12 capital D's. It also means one of the thousands of small D's, even back in that culture. And so that's how we have to use that word today.
Interesting. Talking with Doug Greenwald, Senior Teaching Fellow and Executive Director at Preserving Bible Times. I want to remind you once again, you can link to their website from ours if you're listening on BrokenRoadRadio.com this morning. There's a link to Preserving Bible Times over on the right-hand side of the homepage. Also note that there's a book that appears on our homepage. It's Doug's new book, Becoming a Judean Shepherd. It's not a real thick book. It's something you can read in a few hours and benefit greatly from. It's available to you free, courtesy of Doug and Preserving Bible Times. You can either download a PDF version that you can read on your Kindle, your phone, your computer, or we've got a limited number of hard copies as well. And all you got to do is email us here at Broken Road Radio with your mailing address, and we'll get one out to you. No charge, postage paid, all that good stuff. So take advantage of that offer while it's available. And all we do is limit you to two copies if you want the hard copy. But we encourage you to do that and give it to people. Let people read it and benefit from Doug's work and from Preserving Bible Times. And it'll leave you feeling sheepish, I guarantee you, in one way or another. No, but you'll be glad you did it. Becoming a Judean Shepherd, available to you from BrokenRoadRadio.com. Doug, thanks very much, as always, for spending time with us, and you've spent a lot of it over the last 2 years, and are you going to be around next Wednesday?
Yes.
I keep feeling like there's a transition or a trip coming up. I don't know why that is.
No, September is pretty clean. It's October that gets pretty busy.
Okay, well, we'll look forward to it. Be blessed. Have a good week, and we'll see you next week. Okay.
Thanks, guys.
Music from Josh Garrels.